You are listening to Sheep Might Fly, a podcast of serialised fiction written and read by Tansy Rayner Roberts. Our current serial is Curse of Bronze. Chapter 8. A Curse on Both Your Houses. The cursed objects screamed. It felt to Bella as if the entire house shuddered in pain and shock. She heard more smashing glass, more screaming objects, more howling from voices unknown, and then silence. Bella made her way cautiously out of the parlour, feeling the bronze key jump angrily against her skin. She stepped into the hallway and stopped. Lionel and Mrs. McCabe stood alertly in the doorway behind her. She saw, to her amazement, Mrs. Selwa Gardner and her two very large werewolf sons crammed into the narrow hallway. All three of them were trapped in what looked like soap bubbles, stretched and malformed to fit the shapes required. One of the werewolves was missing an arm, drenched in his own blood. The other werewolf brother was soaking wet, with water rather than blood, and had a large squid crammed violently into his bubble with him. All three gardeners screamed silently, with no sound escaping the bubbles.
"Oh, I see what happened," said Lionel.
"Do tell," gasped Bella. She felt like she was going to be short of breath for a week.
"Clearly, that one disturbed the shell of Sanivar, hence the squid and half the ocean on his face. And that one broke the shelf with the dagger of nightmares on it, got his arm. Then the lady at the front hit that tripwire, the one charmed against thieves and barbarians, and that set off the prison bubbles. Really, they're lucky, because the dagger of nightmares fell outside the bubble. See it there on the floor? If it hadn't, it would still be trying to chop bits off that werewolf chappy there."
Bella closed her eyes momentarily. Tripwires.
Talk about luck.
See right there? If this lady at the front had stepped even half a boot further, she'd have hit the other tripwire, the one that sends a giant boulder down the trick staircase and smashes them all in the face.
Bella whirled on him.
Tripwires!
Obviously, said Lionel, faltering slightly. That's why you're always so careful. When you...
There was a long, awkward silence.
I didn't know about the tripwires, said Bella. My aunt never mentioned it. No one ever mentioned it.
Watch for traps, her sister Faith had told her. But Bella had thought that was a joke.
No, I see that now. Right.
Lionel cleared his throat.
Luck is a very important trait, you know, highly underrated, and apparently you have pots of it. Good show.
Sergeant Stamp got his culprit, even if it wasn't entirely the juicy confession he had hoped for. The prison bubbles dissolved when Bella, on the advice of Lionel, used a command phrase that the house recognised. Aunt Charlotte's sense of humour being what it was. The phrase was, "Burglars beware." The bronze key around Bella's neck hummed as she made the command. The house liked it when she enforced her authority. Oddly, the phrase worked instantly with the werewolves, but the final bubble was hesitant to release Mrs. Gardner. There were not enough handcuffs to go around, as Sergeant Stamp only had one very well-polished, barely used set as part of his regular uniform. As it turned out, Bella had a great many armchairs who were only too happy to secure the home invaders, long enough to interview them, as long as the blood was wiped away first. They had a bit of a scuffle about who would get the honour. Maggie, Ariadne, and Mr. Colchester were the winners, and Bella was delighted she had successfully memorized all of their names. The youngest gardener werewolf healed rather rapidly while all this was going on. He did not acquire a new arm in the process, and sulked about it. Mrs. Macabre, having assisted with an intimidating stare or two during the process of shifting the invaders from the hallway to the parlour, now took herself out of the scene, perching on a chair nearby in order to observe. Professor Tunbridge sat on a nearby couch with rather less graciousness, but she made no sign of wanting to leave. That was good, as Bella still had some questions for her, even if she could no longer remember what the questions were. It was a little easier to think up questions for Mrs. Gardner and her sons. Bella faced the three of them, now locked in the grip of her three sturdiest armchairs. Mrs. Gardner looked defiant, her eyes practically glowing. Was she a werewolf too? Bella was mildly embarrassed that she couldn't tell. It was obvious with the men, who had more hair on their necks and face than was socially acceptable outside Lyceum. "How did you break in?" she asked first. Selwa gave her a biting grin, with human teeth flashing. "Free my left hand, and I'll show you." Bella hesitated. "Go ahead, Mr. Colchester." The chair shifted slightly, and Selwa Gardner's arm was freed. She dipped her hand into the top of her dress and came up with a very familiar bronze key on a ribbon. "I made a copy," she said smugly, "with a pad of wax while you were in my custody. So I guess I'm the heir of the house now, little girl. Your wards recognized me. They let me in." Bella's eyes narrowed. Her own key lifted of its own accord, floating through the air towards its twin. "I think not," she said. Selwa's key shattered. Bella bit her own lip to stop from yelping in shock. She had no idea that was something she could do, but the house wanted it. The house was furious at being tricked. "What do you want here?" she asked. "I want what's mine," Selwa snarled. Her sons snarled too, with rather more lupine aggression. "And that is?" "The 29th gargoyle. Your aunt had no right to keep it from us. We were partners." "Why the 29th? Bella challenged. "If you know what it is, you know that the 29th gargoyle and the 30th are part of the same object. Why do you care about one and not the other?" Selwa sneered at her and refused to answer. "I don't imagine you speak sanguinary," Bella tried. "Vampire bullshit," said Selwa. "No, thank you." "I'll have to trust you to tell the truth then. Did you curse my Aunt Charlotte?" "If I'd wanted her dead, I'd have had my boys rip her to pieces." That had the ring of truth, even if it wasn't endorsed by an ancient magical language. "Was that your plan?" "My backup plan? Someone else got to her first." "It all came down to the book of the two gargoyles, and it wasn't like Aunt Charlotte had right of ownership to that, any more than the rest of them. Like all the other shiny brass gargoyle artifacts upstairs, it had been stolen. Twice, really. First from the tomb itself, and second from the museums that took custody of the items." Bella leaned in. "Do you have a good reason to want the 29th gargoyle for yourself?" Selwa Gardner looked startled but sincere. "I do," she choked. "All right then, stay where you are. Mr. Colchester, please confine her arm again. There's a good armchair." Bella glanced at Lionel. "Mr. Hope, I believe we require the artifact.
Mrs. McCabe, I trust you're willing to let us use the grotesque glossary to assist.
If you have something to read, said Mrs. McCabe smoothly, I would be greatly interested in assisting you to do so.
Hold on a minute, Professor Tunbridge burst out. You mean the artifacts are here? You have stolen property on the premises. I demand you turn over all the gargoyles this minute, so they can be returned to their proper owners.
Bella gave her a cool glance.
Do you mean the museums, or the people of Apollonia?
That's hardly for you to decide, said the professor hotly. And yet here I am, making the decisions. Lionel, please.
This should be interesting, Lionel said.
He popped through the hole in the wall and went to the nearest shelves, pulling the antique book from amongst other similarly small leather-bound texts. Bella could have kicked herself for not guessing. Trust a librarian to hide a book in a library.
Give that to me, snapped Professor Tunbridge, getting to her feet. Now, beast.
Lionel gave her a far more sarcastic expression than his leonine features should really be able to convey.
I don't think so, he said, and deposited the book into Bella's hands.
Selwa let out a small, wounded sound.
Show me, she said roughly, the other side.
Bella turned the book over, showing the wolfish brass gargoyle face sticking out of the back of the book.
Don't give it to her, ordered Professor Tunbridge. She's the thief who stole it. Her and those grotty werewolf boys. We all knew you were terrorizing the city's museum. The brass cat gang. She snorted.
Why couldn't you catch us then? Selwa challenged. She glanced briefly at Sergeant Stamp, who was diligently taking notes.
If we stole them, there's no way anyone could prove it. We're not the ones with a room full of stolen artifacts upstairs.
How do you know about that? Bella asked in surprise. Sergeant Stamp looked at her with an air of reproach.
I was going to report it, she said apologetically. I only discovered them today.
As you say, miss, said Sergeant Stamp quietly and made further notes.
Do let me know if you need another pencil, Lionel said helpfully, always willing to assist the authorities.
Well, Bella invited Selwa to answer.
We had a deal, your aunt and I, she said, eyes fixed on the book. I didn't care about the rest of the artifacts. She was the one who cut a deal with the Apollonian government to return the rest of the hoard from the Tomb of Brass. In return for that one artifact, to which your family, mine, have an equal claim.
Desperate, Selwa finally looked up at Bella. Charlotte was supposed to break the curse. That's what all this was about. But then she went quiet. I didn't know if she changed her mind or if she failed. She wouldn't talk to me about it. Kept telling me to be patient. Like our families haven't waited 25 years.
Did you kill Charlotte Hathaway? Bella asked again.
I didn't want her dead, said Selwa stubbornly. I wanted her to keep her promise.
Mrs. McCabe cleared her throat gently. I rather think that this might be my fault. From somewhere on her silk-draped person, she produced the tiny grotesque glossary. The Ministry of Cold-Blooded Crimes have been aware for some time of the nocturnal activities of Mrs. Gardner and her sons, Rudolph and Dunsany, the Brass Cat Gang, as they've been named in the newspapers. We only recently began to suspect that Charlotte Hathaway was also involved, which is why I stopped being quite so hospitable about her visits to study the glossary.
The note I found in the book, said Bella. I thought it was a bit too obvious. You were testing me to find out what I knew.
Mrs. McCabe looked inscrutable.
Then why, said Professor Tunbridge between gritted teeth, did you refuse to allow me access? I've been requesting to see the book for years, while Charlotte Bloody Hathaway was allowed to look at it every other week. Mrs. Macabre gave her a chilly smile. I don't like you very much, and I am willing to repeat that in sanguinary, if you wish to be certain I'm speaking the truth. She turned her back on the professor, looking at Bella. You, though, I have a feeling we were always meant to work together, and I am starting to suspect that I should have been more trusting of your aunt's recent motives, or at least questioned her more closely. Mrs. Macabre held out the tiny golden glossary, extending her long, pale arm. Let's introduce the books to each other, shall we? No, said Professor Tunbridge suddenly, as if she was about to burst forward and rip the books from Bella and Mrs. Macabre. You can't do this. Do it, growled Selwa Gardner. Bella felt the gargoyle book hum in her arms as she took the grotesque glossary in hand. In that instant, both of the gargoyle faces on either side of the larger book became animated enough to open their mouths and scream. Thanks for listening to Sheep Might Fly. This podcast was recorded on Palawa land. I acknowledge and pay respect to the Tasmanian Aboriginal people as the traditional and continuing custodians of Lutruwita, Tasmania. Sheep Might Fly is produced and edited by Andrew Finch. You can sign up to my author newsletter for updates. Follow me on Instagram, Blue Sky, or Threads at TansyRR. And if you like this podcast, consider supporting me at Patreon, where you can receive all kinds of bonus rewards, early ebooks, and exclusive stories for a small monthly pledge. This month, which is March 2024, there's a new bonus ebook for people at the $2 tier or above, which is a kind of Wodehouse-inspired retelling of Sleeping Beauty with a character and a voice that I am utterly delighted by. I'm still very much in my Wodehouse phase. It is affecting everything that I write. Or rather, I'm letting it come out in several short stories so that it doesn't overpower my longer projects. But I'm having a lot of fun with it. So Waking Flora is the new short story. If you're interested, the $2 tier, at depending on currency conversion. But the ebook bonus tier, which is the second tier, is the one that will get you that story. Or if you come in at the $3 backstage pass level, you not only get a quarterly newsletter of all my behind-the-scenes doingses, but you also get access to the ongoing prose serial at the moment with weekly updates of chapters of my new Teacup Magic book, This Enchanted Island, which will be, it's in pre-orders, it'll be out properly in August, but my Patreon subscribers get it first. Back to the writing without a net, which is often what I do here on the podcast too. We have a few more weeks of Curses of Bronze, and then I have a brief little surprise experiment, and then we'll be starting a new original fiction serial, which is my long-awaited Jane Austen with Dragons. I want to say novella. I absolutely want it to just be a novella. Later in the year, I will be returning to the more grungy sword and sorcery world of the River Divine. So we've got a packed podcast coming up in 2024, as long as I can keep my voice alive. I'll see you next week for more gargoyles.